programming sponsored by Charity Mobile. Life is calling. Take it with you. More information at charitymobile.com.
The following is a relevant radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
All the issues, all the topics, one place. From Maui to Maine, Phoenix to Philadelphia, and Eau Claire to the OC, this is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The bombshell announcement about Matt Lauer's sudden firing for alleged sexual misconduct in the workplace was made in a memo to NBC News staff overnight. Fans outside the Today Show studio in Rock Center were shocked.
Oh my gosh, Matt Lauer. He's like a staple.
Nearly 20 years hosting the Today Show, the New York Post reporting, NBC insiders say Lauer is accused of sexually assaulting a network staffer at the 2016 Rio Olympics.
Every day it's someone new.
CBS and PBS fired newsman Charlie Rose earlier this month. Fox News dumped Bill O'Reilly back in February. Sarah Lee Kessler, NBC News Radio, New York.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, let's talk about that, too. Coming up, we'll get into Matt Lauer, Garrison Keillor, another big name. I've said this before. I'm going to continue to say we are just seeing the tip of the iceberg regarding these accusations and what's now unfolding. And we'll share some very powerful audio with you as well from everyone from Lauer's co-host to Kathy Lee Gifford. Megyn Kelly, you remember that whole situation with O'Reilly? She was very vocal in the past about Bill O'Reilly's allegations. Here, just take a moment before we get into my next issue, and I'll share with what she had to say on this morning on NBC. Listen to this.
And I see the anguish on my colleagues' faces. But when this happens, what we don't see is the pain on the faces of those who found the courage to come forward. And it is a terrifying thing to do. We don't see the career opportunities women lose because of sexual harassment or the intense stress it causes a woman dealing with it when she comes to work each day. I am thinking of those women this morning and hoping they are okay. An empowerment revolution in which women who for years have felt they had no choice but to simply deal with being harassed at work are now starting to picture another reality, to feel that change is within their grasp. It is a sign of progress. Of women finding their voices, their courage, and of the erosion of a shameful power imbalance that has been in place for far too long.
As of course, Megyn Kelly. We'll talk much more about this coming up a little later in the broadcast. In fact, one of the things I want to do is, I mean, we can rehash all the people accused. I want to talk about the psychology behind it. What drives a man or a woman who is in power to sexually assault someone? And let's talk about being also presumed guilty before you're found guilty. You know, whatever happened to being innocent before being innocent before guilt in this country. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. But anyway, I want to talk about one other issue here with you and get you plugged into something that I'm just curious about. I've been fascinated by, and sometimes it's hard to really explain this. I'm talking about cryptocurrencies. And you probably heard a lot about them. We've talked about them a few weeks ago, especially this cryptocurrency called Bitcoin. Bitcoin is this computer currency. It started back in 2010, and for a long time, it was valued at about $1,000 per coin. But in 2013, and at the end of last year, in fact, yesterday, it's just been on a steady increase. It hit $10,000 for the first time. And then I think it was today. I just saw the number before I walked in here. It was over $11,000, like $11,377. That's according to MarketWatch.com. Its year to date gains exceeded 1,000%. And I thought, what's up with this currency? I don't get it. And what an investment it would have been. Can you imagine if putting just a few hundred dollars in this thing when it was down there? Or even a couple of weeks ago, if you had invested in, how much money you would have gotten back. The value has dropped a little bit back towards earth. It ended, I think, today around 9,400 and some change. But it's still a huge increase over the $1,000 price it started out with. I think it started out this year with. So we're going to talk about that. Bill Ulivieri is going to be joining me here, and he's kind of an expert on this as well. But one of the things I think, if you want to learn a little bit more about this, and you want to know what to expect, Fortune.com gave some great insight into this. Listen to what they have to offer.
2 years ago, cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or Ethereum was essentially a tech geek topic. Now it's becoming increasingly something that mainstream investors care about. Since January 1, the value of a single Bitcoin has gone up more than 800%, and the total market cap of all cryptocurrencies is up 1,300%. Just as a point of comparison, the stock market over the same point is up about 17 or 18%. So you can see the difference between 18% and 800% is pretty appealing. So an 800% return in 1 year, well, that sounds amazing. Of course, it comes with a lot of risks. The prices of cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, are incredibly volatile. The supply of cryptocurrencies is very small, which means the prices swing more. Some of the currencies are considered vulnerable to fraud. Some of them are considered vulnerable to hackers who could essentially erase their value. Will the government start regulating them in ways that keep them from being valuable? All those things are very real concerns and big open question marks. And if you invest in cryptocurrency, you're exposing yourself to those risks.
There's one more risk that wasn't mentioned. Is this a bubble? Will it soon pop? A lot of people want to get on the cryptocurrency train right now. Bill Ulivieri is the owner of Seneca Capital Management in Chicago. He actually explained this to me last time, and I brought him back today to help us better understand cryptocurrencies and what they mean, and ultimately where the meteoric rise of Bitcoin is actually going, and whether or not it's a bubble. Hey, Bill, thank you for your time. Welcome back once again.
Oh, Drew, thanks for having me. It's great to be on the show.
Yeah, this is, to me, we had this conversation because I really wanted to understand what cryptocurrency was all about, especially Bitcoin. I couldn't believe how much. I think we talked, it was like at $8,000, and that was just a couple of weeks ago. $11,000 today. You talk about a return on your investment. That, to me, is absolutely just mind-boggling. There are some people who are saying, hey, wait a minute, this is a bubble, and it's going to pop. How do you see Bitcoin, and what do you attribute to the incredible rise that we've seen in it?
Drew, it's all about supply and demand. Bitcoin is gaining more and more adoption, not only here in the United States, but globally. It has been on a meteoric rise because, again, it's becoming more mainstream, and exchanges like the Chicago Mercantile Group is going to be listing futures contracts on Bitcoin sometime in the month of December or in the first quarter of 2018. The Chicago Board Options Exchange also has a futures exchange connected with it. They're going to be listing futures and options eventually. The NASDAQ exchange will be listing Bitcoin futures. There are 100,000 different companies all over the world that are accepting Bitcoin as a payment service. So while Bitcoin might be kind of new to many listeners, the truth is it has been gaining an incredible amount of adoption democratically, you know, across a wide range of people who are using it for different purposes.
My guest today, Bill Ulivieri, if you want to join us, I have him for a small window today, our toll-free number, 888-914-9149. If you've got questions or concerns or you want to learn a little bit more about it, it's a great time to get plugged in, and feel free to join the conversation. So I guess the big question a lot of people have, is this a bubble? MarketWatch said that, you know, it tumbled a couple thousand dollars today because another cryptocurrency had a computer slowdown. And, you know, how dependent is this currency on, I guess, how well the internet works?
Well, it's very dependent on the internet, Drew, to be honest with you. It is a computer-based network. You have to put the power of computing somewhere. So either it's in the hands of the Federal Reserve or the banking system, Visa, MasterCard, et cetera, or it's distributed evenly throughout a bunch of participants. And whether Bitcoin is in a bubble, I mean, I don't want to focus too much on Bitcoin because that's just a small, teeny, tiny part of this technology that is incredibly profound. I mean, we're kind of in this new normal. You have Uber, which owns no taxi cabs and has a market capitalization of about 50 to 70 billion. Facebook creates no content, and they have a market valuation of over 500 billion. Airbnb owns no hotels and no resorts. Their size of their company is $50 million. And here's Bitcoin. It's a part of the new normal. It's a bank. It's a currency that has no CEO. There's no bank branches. There's no customer service department. It's not backed by any one state or nation, yet it has a market capitalization of almost $200 billion, $170 billion. And so in the last 24 hours, we had almost $12 billion of Bitcoin exchange hands, person to person, in the last 24 hours without the need of a bank,
without the need
of a credit union, without the need of the government interference.
That's so crazy.
It's incredible.
The CEO of J.P. Morgan, I think it's Jamie Dimon, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
He was on CNBC, and he says, look, when it comes to Bitcoin, because this is incredible. I mean, and a lot of eyes are on this cryptocurrency right now. He says you should be very skeptical. Listen to this.
You know, Bitcoin can tell $100,000 of Bitcoin before it goes down. So this is not a advice on what you do. My daughter bought some Bitcoin and it went up, and she thinks she's a genius now. But it's I did refer to it as like the tulip bulb crisis of the 1700s, whatever. But here's the reason: governments, the first thing they do is form a currency. They like to control the currency. They control it through a central bank. They also like to know who has it, where it is, where it's going. Okay, and you just saw China just is closing down the Bitcoin exchanges. And what all I ever said is that at Bitcoin, the bigger these things get, the more governments, right now, they look at it as a novelty. You know, they love in Washington, talk about all this technology, we love technology. Wait until someone gets hurt. Wait until it's used for illicit purposes, which it is somewhat used for illicit purposes. They close it down. That's my point. So it's not, you can argue there's, and I also said there's a good reason for it. If you're in Venezuela or Ecuador or North Korea, you're better off probably using Bitcoin than using their currency.
And that's the question for me. I mean, our currency no longer, Bill, is backed by gold, right? We used to have that gold standard. Will other countries get in on the act, develop their own cryptocurrencies? Will that be the new type of exchange? Is everything going to be digital? Or will people jump on board with this particular currency?
Well, the beauty of the technology that Bitcoin sits on, called blockchain technology, the answer is yes to all of your statements. And you have to remember that the United States was only on the gold standard for about 54 years.
Right.
It abandoned the gold standard sometime in the 1920s or very early 30s, at least for U.S. citizens. And it hasn't really been backed by anything other than the full faith and credit of the United States. So we will see nations who, like Zimbabwe and other nations in Africa, they will create their own digital currency because it costs too much money to print their own currency. In Zimbabwe, you have trillion-dollar bills, not a 50 or 100. It's a trillion-dollar bill.
Wow.
But that's ridiculous. It costs them more in paper and ink than it's worth.
That's hilarious.
And so you see countries like Kenya, where 75% of the economic activity is done using a phone you and I would have thrown away a few years ago. Brazil, India, all over the world are adopting not just Bitcoin. And again, I'm not saying that Bitcoin is an investment or it is a type of asset class, but it's not something that I would recommend necessarily for investing in, at least for people that don't have 100% to lose. What I'm saying is that technology is absolutely amazing. And what we're going to see is Bitcoin really is programmable money.
Gotcha.
It can be whatever you want it to be. And that's what I find very exciting. Even in Nicaragua, 60% of the population of Nicaragua lives below the poverty line. Only 14% are able to borrow, or 19% have a bank account. But 93% of the citizenry owns prepaid cell phones. So they can buy and sell and transact almost every single person in the country of Nicaragua, but they couldn't get a bank account or a checking account or use cash or anything. So it's really, I have a stack of books here next to me, Drew. It's Laudato Si from Pope Francis.
Sure.
I have Caritas in Veritate, another book that was written by a gentleman named Thomas E. Woods, The Church and the Market, A Catholic Defense of the Free Economy.
Great book.
And now that I read these documents through the eyes of being completely all in with Bitcoin and blockchain technology,
it's
the most Catholic form of money I could possibly have ever imagined. There's something profound about this new type of digital programmable money, and it fits into a lot of our Catholic social justice
issues. Make me want to get in on it, but I'm already I'm behind the curve.
Relax, young. Relax.
How do you get in on a currency that's worth $10,000, a Bitcoin? Or 11
now. Is it really worth $10,000? No. It could be worth a dollar. It could be worth a million. Nobody knows. Only God
that's
knows,
true.
And I can say that on this show. God only knows what Bitcoin is worth. Because ultimately, Drew, it's about supply and demand.
Yep.
And it's not about the valuation or being backed by anything. Money in general, a medium of exchange has virtually no value whatsoever.
Right.
The actual physical components of a dollar is not that much greater than a seashell was used 1,000 years ago.
Right.
And that's what makes it money, right? So we don't know what Bitcoin is really worth. All I can say is that the gift of the blockchain, the gift of this cryptocurrency, that it has within it a utility value. So when you look out the window and you see phone lines and water pipes and telephone poles, that utility system is there. Well, it's called the public utility system, right? We tap into that. But imagine if we could get paid for every piece of data that goes through those lines. Every time someone turns on a light switch, we can receive a reward for that. That's kind of the thing, the utility value behind blockchain, which makes it so exciting, is that anybody, anywhere, can participate in its popularity and
Bill,
its use.
Let me do this. Let me grab a call or two here because we only have a couple minutes. We'll go to Los Angeles, California first. Carlos, hi, you're on the air with Mr. Ulivari.
Hi, sir. Yes, with 50 euros, you could buy a package of Bitcoin. Just like an elephant, you can't eat an elephant at one sitting, so you get little packets of Bitcoin. And with this, I need to get going, but anybody wants to know any information, go to carlosconnector@gmail.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Carlos. I appreciate that. Bill, let me ask you, how can people get Bitcoin if they want it? What would you recommend?
Well, there's a few ways of doing it. One would be you could go on Craigslist and meet somebody in a parking lot or your local coffee shop, and you would give them cash, and they would send you Bitcoin. You could do a Google search for ATM machines, and you can actually go to an ATM. You put in cash, you flash your driver's license, and you fill out some little bit of online paperwork right there in front of you, and you can put in, feed it $100 bills or $50 bills, and you can get Bitcoin sent to your address.
Yeah.
Because remember, Bitcoin is not a physical object. It's an entry in this online ledger that's all over the world. Another way of buying Bitcoin would be to go to a website called Coinbase or Gemini. And these are companies that are registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. They're registered with the Financial Services Group in New York. They have to follow strict anti-money laundering and know your client rules. And you would connect your debit account or your checking account to your Bitcoin account.
Wow.
And you would buy it just like you would buy something through PayPal or on eBay or any other, on Amazon.
That's crazy.
You just click buy, and it ends up in your account.
All right. Well, if people want to get in touch with you, too, let me give you a quick plug. Senegal Capital Management, right? Is there a web address for that?
Sure. It's www.senegalcapital.com.
All right, SenecaCapital.com, easy way to remember.
SenecaCapital.com.
Sounds great. Hey, Bill, thank you. I got to hold it right there. We'll talk more about this. This is an amazing story. As I said, we spoke when it was 8,000, 11,000 today at one point, and we'll see where it all goes. But cryptocurrencies, I tend to agree, are probably going to be the future. Thanks for your time and for your insight and for all you do. Always good to talk with you.
Thank you.
That's Bill Ulivari, folks. He's the owner of Senecal Capital Management in Chicago. And check him out, SenecalCapital.com. All right, it's 22 after the